Welcome to the Business of Cybersecurity, a podcast which is part of the Tech Talks Network. My name's Neil C. Hughes. You may know me from the Tech Talks Daily podcast, which covers a completely different area every episode. And in this series, The Business of Cybersecurity, I explore where security and businesses intersect. So today I'm going to sit down with Brian Dye, CEO of Corelight, a company that's redefining how organizations detect, understand, and respond to threats that slip past traditional defenses. And with leadership experience at McAfee, Citrix, and Symantec, I think it's fair to say that Brian has spent his career at the front lines of enterprise security. But today at Corelight, he's helping some of the world's biggest organizations move beyond firewalls and endpoints to see what's really happening across their networks. The ground truth. Truth that tells you what actually went bump in the night. And we'll explore together how generative AI is changing the game for both attackers and defenders, and why automation is becoming a survival skill of sorts, and how Corelight is helping enterprises close the visibility gap that has defined the past decade of cybersecurity. So, how do you defend against a threat landscape where the rules change almost every hour? Well, let's find out as I officially introduce you to my guest. So, a massive warm welcome to the show. Can you tell everyone listening a little about who you are and what you do?
Neil, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. My name's Brian Dye. I'm the CEO at Corelight. We're the fastest growing network detection response company, and we're the only one that actually works with your Gen AI platform out of the box. You know, before being CEO, I'm historically a product guy. So I spent north of 10 years at both Symantec and McAfee, kind of serving enterprises and governments around the world. And on a personal front, just happily married, father of two kids, and trying to offset a mean dark chocolate habit.
I love it. And before you join me on the podcast, I was doing a little research on you, and you said that I think it was Corelight helps customers find what went bump in the night. And a guy that's been on that pager duty back in the day when it goes at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday or something like that, I kind of got the idea what you were talking about. But can you tell me a little bit more about what that means in today's threat landscape, where those attacks usually blindside you when you least expect it?
Yeah, the days of when things were nice and loud and easy to find have come and gone. And we really find ourselves in what we call typhoon season, because there's a whole class of attackers, Salt Typhoon, Volt Typhoon, et cetera, that are really what most kind of enterprise class and government class organizations are worried about, because they're evading your traditional defenses, right? They're going past your firewalls. They're going past your EDR. And the real trick is, not only are these advanced attackers doing this, but the attacker use of Gen AI means that these really sophisticated attacks that used to only be the purview of the highest end companies in the world, only the concern of the highest end in the world, are getting weaponized and democratized radically fast. We had a customer advisory board recently where some of our customers were sharing that the types of exploits that used to take 3 weeks are now getting weaponized in 3 hours. Wow. So there is a SharePoint vulnerability earlier this year where one of our customers, the vulnerability was published, the exploit attacks were happening in 2 hours, and in the space of 72 hours before they could patch it, they had over 20,000 attacks in those 72 hours. So the high-end type of techniques that were there to help protect that used to be really just a problem for the high-end folks are now incredibly rapidly becoming everyone's problem.
Wow. And I suspect when you hear a huge stat like that, a very real world use case directly from a customer, it must make you think differently about what we're doing here. And especially at a time where I think many companies are still focusing on that belts and braces of approach to IT, on prevention tools like firewall and endpoint protections, etc. So why is that approach no longer enough? I mean, listening to that use case there, it sounds like it certainly isn't. But can you expand on why it's no longer enough?
Yeah, and Neil, I'd key in on a key thing you said. It's not that it's a bad thing. It's just not enough. So if there's anybody listening who does not have, you know, a next gen firewall and an EDR deployed, stop listening. Go make sure you've got those two. That's just good hygiene for everybody, right? Yeah. But the key is, as you said, they're really just not enough, because a bunch of these attackers are now moving to where those defenses are not. So they're going after network device vulnerabilities. They're going after unmanaged devices, right? We, I think it was the Verizon breach report that mentioned an 18x increase in network device vulnerabilities just last year. And then once those attackers get in, right, once they bypass those traditional perimeter defenses, they're using both great malware toolkits like command and control, lateral movement, and a technique called living off the LAN, right? That's really when you're using legitimate IT tools for nefarious purposes. So there's no quote unquote malware to go find, right? If you have PowerShell in your environment, that's perfectly fine until the attackers start using the PowerShell. So a lot of the reason that you need this whole class of technology is that the attackers themselves are bypassing those perimeter defenses, and you need kind of A, the right perspective, right? The right point of visibility. And you need what CISA calls network baselining and anomaly detection. So if you look at the CISA advisories from the past year and a half, about 80% of them have one of the recommendations being you should baseline your networks. You can look for anomaly detections or look for anomalies. That's the type of thing that this category is good for. And, you know, we're fortunate enough to have Rob Joyce as an advisor. He was formerly ran cyber for the NSA. And back when he ran Tailored Access Operations, which is the offensive hacking arm of the NSA, he did a rare public speaking appearance. This is like 2016, by the way. And one of his great quotes was, their fear as Tailored Access Operations was a well-placed network tap and someone who's looking at the logs. Because you have to know your network environment because, gosh darn it, we will, right, as TAO. I think that really summarizes kind of how you need to think about defending against this class of attacks.
And going back to what you said a few moments ago, let's presume everybody listening now, everybody is on board. They've got prevention tools like firewalls and endpoint protection in place as standard. But as you said, network detection and response has now become a additional critical layer of defense. But what is it about CoreLite's approach that differs from, let's say, traditional monitoring solutions?
Yeah, the whole category is really interesting because if you think about the evolution of the entire category, there's been this pendulum swing of innovation between great innovation on the endpoint, great innovation on the network, and back and forth. And if you look at the last decade, it has been the decade of EDR without question, right? And so as a result, the attackers are bypassing that well-defended point and finding access around them. And what they're finding is a set of internal network security tools that haven't had material innovation in the last 10 years. So what we do is we basically do three things. First, we take a look at what these legacy tools are and we kind of modernize and consolidate a bunch of them. So if you think about NetFlow and PCAP and standalone IDS, that was the state of the art 10 years ago. That's actually what a lot of folks still rely on. That is the weakness that these attackers are exploiting. So take those legacy categories, modernize them. That's step one. And then step two is, a lot of those were about core visibility, and that's super important because, as we'll talk a lot about, the data here actually is what matters. But you also need a pretty advanced range of detection analytics. You got to put every form of math you can think of against this problem. Supervised and unsupervised ML, anomaly detection, right? All the things to kind of find these subtle advanced threats. And then, of course, once you've got the right data, once you've got the right detection coverage, now you need all the workflow acceleration you can. And that's where Gen AI has to be in the defender's toolkit to go and actually respond here. Again, one of the most fascinating quotes that came out of a recent advisory board meeting for us was that we already have companies that are automating their response to the point of sub 15 second SLAs. And that, if you're not there now, that feels like a crazy aspirational thing to go for, a 15-second response. But that is state-of-the-art. Folks are doing that today. It is an achievable goal to run after. But you need the right data, the right detection, and the right workflow automation to achieve that type of a target.
Wow, I can hear people on the way to the office now and entering going, 15 seconds we need to be aiming for. That is quite a goal. And when I was looking at your selfie, I mean, a quick look on your LinkedIn before you sat down with me today revealed that you've led major teams at McAfee, Citrix, and Symantec. So I've got to ask, looking back, what lessons from those experiences have helped shape how you lead CoreLite today when the threat, the level of threats is so much higher and so much more sophisticated thanks to AI, etc. But what did you learn from those days?
Oh, Neil, it's a great one. We could do an entire podcast on lessons learned, mistakes, and things to do differently because I'm as human as everybody else. But I think there's probably three things that jump out at me. I mean, number one, you've got to design as a platform for day one, right? Because if you look at what everyone's trying to evolve away from, it's forcing defenders to choose between the best capability or the best integration, when what they really want is both, right? So designing as a platform from day one is really key. The second one that I definitely took away in a really good way was really thinking about the customer is not a monolithic creature, right? Defenders have very different architectures, very different team sizes. The defensive architecture of a company that has 500 or 1,000 people in their security team and the defensive architecture of a company that has 5 or 10 people in their security team are completely different. And you've got to have the design and architectural flexibility to do what's right for those different sizes of defensive organizations. That's really key. And then I think the third one is you really got to understand the root of your value. And in our world and in this category, the real root of the value is just the ground truth behavioral record of what's happening on the network. Like the data, the ground truth evidence is the irreplaceable asset here. You know, if you think about it, you can change all sorts of analytics tools and those can evolve. Gen AI adoption is a great example of that. But you can't evolve your way around, I don't have the data. And look, I'd love to tell you that that was some mastered stroke and design philosophy I had, but I'd be lying. You know, the reality is we've had this privilege, and this actually wasn't from the Symantec and McAfee days. We've had this privilege of learning from the open source Zeek community that we're the custodian of. And this community is super interesting because it's some of the highest end, most well-funded, most sophisticated defenders on the planet. And a lot of what we've tried to do as a company is learn from their design patterns and bring that to everybody else. And so, you know, sometimes it's I would love to tell you I had some master plan where this all worked, but really we just found really, really smart defenders and followed what they were doing. And, you know, that's the, as long as you take that dose of humility, you can learn a lot.
I love it. And cyber attacks are sadly becoming faster and more evasive here in the UK. Recently, we've seen a retailer giant like Marks and Spencer's go down for weeks, and equally car manufacturing Land Rover, they had to ground to a halt too. So, I mean, so many different sectors are impacted here. So how can an organization in any industry build visibility, build resilience when attackers seem to, it feels like they're always one step ahead.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And look, those specific attacks you mentioned are so horrible, not just for the companies, but the entire supply chain around them, right? The echo impact is horrifying. And I think the biggest guidance I would have for folks is that there's a subtle but really important mindset here to think about resilience. It's that data is readiness. What does that mean? Right. Yeah. You know, there's an old proverb, right? The best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The second best time is now. Right. So if you treat your data and both coverage and time of your data as a first class metric, right? Many of the CISOs we work with have their operating dashboards of, you know, readiness, detection, response, and compliance, right? Pretty standard kind of operating board. But if you think about that readiness part of your dashboard, are you thinking about what your data coverage is? Because holes in that data coverage are what the attackers are going after. So that's kind of step one. Step two, the data is only useful if your team knows about it. And so even if you don't have a dedicated threat hunting team, carving off a little bit of time for your existing team to do active threat hunting in your environment is a force multiplier, even if it's just a couple hours on a Friday morning or whatever the case is, because it helps find actual threats and policy violations. But it also means your team will know their environment better. So then they get faster on all the routine IR that they do. So it helps at the high end of the spectrum and it helps on the everyday types of attacks. And then the third, kind of from a metric standpoint, the really interesting metric that I've seen folks track is what number of cases does your team have to close for reasons unknown? Mm. It's kind of your confidence metric, right? There's a great piece of advice that we heard that I heard from one of our longtime sales engineers is that he hates it when folks would find a command and control attack coming out of a server. They can't figure it out, so they just reimage the server. His comment was, that's like hosing down the crime scene, right? What are we doing? you haven't found how they got there. You've just gotten rid of all the evidence, right? So tracking that number of cases that have to be closed where you don't know why, that tells you where the weak spots in your defensive profile are. And that's your cautionary tale of kind of where you should go look harder of why couldn't we figure that case out.
And as for yourselves at CoreLight, you're currently scaling globally. And I've got to ask, when scaling that quickly and around the world, so what kind of challenges come with maintaining innovation and culture during such rapid growth? Because I would imagine that brings its own set of challenges.
It absolutely does. And look, it's in the great problems to have category. It's like paying too many taxes, right? It's a wonderful problem to have. You know, we think about it in a couple of ways. I mean, first, in the short term, your ability to scale is a function of a spreadsheet, right? It's investments and ratios and you know, dollar spend and things like that. In the medium and long term, though, scaling is about your culture. It's about how people communicate, how they trust, how they make decisions. And the way to anchor in your culture, you know, this has been studied for years, it's really about reinforcing what makes us as an organizational special, what we believe at every level, right? So that folks, we maintain the novelty of the culture, we maintain the integrity of the culture, so we can kind of scale effectively. So that's a big one. And, you know, the other half of what you talked about was on the innovation side. And, you know, as you evolve, you know, when you're really young, and you're starting out as a company, everything is about that first product and product market fit and really making sure that you've got the value realization, right? You've got that and you can scale it. But as you really scale the organization over time, you've got to adopt, you know, and we're big fans of the McKinsey Three Horizon model, but you've got to really adopt a time-based view for R&D. So you've got Horizon 1, which is kind of your bread and butter, the strength of what you're doing for customers today. Horizon 2, which is probably, you know, newer, faster growing kind of products that you're bringing to market. And then Horizon 3, which are those experiments that you're driving. Because you've got to keep experimenting, right? If you're not experimenting, if you're not learning, especially in the world of cyber, you're just at the starting process of dying. Like, who are we kidding? And, you know, a fun example of that, we had a great customer advisory board meeting about a year ago, actually, where we were exploring the topic of VPC flow, right? These are essentially flow logs within the cloud environments, especially Amazon. And we heard from all of our current customers that everybody felt they had to keep them for compliance, but nobody could use them. Too much volume, too little value. So they kind of got dropped into an S3 bucket and were never heard from again. And that seems like a wasted opportunity because there's valuable signal in there. There's intelligence somewhere buried in that trash pile. And we applied a bunch of the techniques that we do kind of in our traditional product lines and said, hey, we can actually take about 90% of the volume out of these VPC flow logs in a way that you're right-sizing kind of volume and value, and you're actually making them useful for the security teams in ways they historically weren't. And it was a great example of kind of one of those Horizon 3 experiments. Just listen to your customers, get into a design program, prototype, you know, do all the kind of classic product development things, and then you can come out with a novel solution to pain points that folks are having every day. So that's the innovation kind of side of your question. You really can't stop. You've just got to think about those different time horizons and treat it accordingly.
And we've touched on how the bad guys are using AI today, but in this evolving game of cat and mouse, there's also increasing interest in using AI to support threat detection. So from your vantage point, how do you see AI fitting into CoreLight strategy without losing that human element of security analysis, which remains so important, right?
Yeah, Neil, it's the biggest topic, I think, in almost all security leadership conversations happening today is, how do we use this? What do we do? And really at the root, what can we trust? If I had a nickel for every trust conversation I was in, I could have retired by now, right? And, you know, because the technology is incredible, but, you know, we've all seen the hallucination problem. And I'd say a couple things here. First, we've really had a front row seat to this because we're an open source company by heritage. And one of the really unplanned gifts we got from being an open source company was that we were out of the box compatible with all of these large language models the moment they hit mainstream. Because look, they've been trained on the public internet. We're open source. They're already trained on us, right? A wonderful, wonderful situation. And as a result, we were about 9 months ahead of everybody else in the category with our first set of Gen AI features. And we really think about Gen AI leverage for defenders kind of in three families. The first is assistance. Things like, translate this alert into English, or, you know, how do I start investigating this alert, right? Really human-centric, but kind of almost co-pilot-ish kind of help, right? The second stage where a lot of folks are putting their calories is just raw automation. If you think about how you get to that 15-second SLA, it's got to be kind of true end-to-end automation. So not just what does this alert mean, but run the entire triage process for me and show me the results of your analysis. Right. So the human is still there assessing the quality of what the AI has done. But, you know, the AI is really doing that entire end-to-end analysis for you. And the third kind of chunk, right, you've got an assistance piece, you've got an automation piece. The third thing we think is the entire third-party ecosystem, because no tool on its own is going to fully solve and create an agentic kind of AI-driven SOC. It's going to be an ecosystem of tools that have to work together. So we need to think about how do we be a native member of that agentic SOC, whether it's partnering with, you know, CrowdStrike Charlotte or SentinelOne's Purple AI or Microsoft Copilot or all the things Splunk is doing, you name it, right? There's a bunch of platforms there. The key across to all of them is that we've got to earn the trust of the analyst that has hands on keyboard, that it is their responsibility to verify that, yes, they are investigating the right threats and they're coming to the right conclusions. So being really transparent with what's being done so the analysts themselves can agree, disagree, give feedback, et cetera, so the tool continues to learn successfully in that environment. And I think the big aha here, and again, you know, kind of fresh off of some customer conversations, is that this is not a myth. We are talking to our current customers today that are automating 93 to 95% or more of their inbound attack volume with a combination of traditional automation and Gen AI. So this is, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when and how fast, because we know the attackers are using it. We know some of the defenders are already seeing these types of results. So what we're trying to really figure out is how do we earn the trust for folks to do that broad-based? And, you know, sorry for the long answer here, but, you know, it's kind of like self-driving cars, right? Nobody was willing to let their self-driving car take them down the highway without keeping their hands on the wheel for the first few trips. And so we're trying to figure out how to kind of emulate that same journey for the defender themselves.
And before you join me on the podcast today, you came directly from a customer meeting. I don't expect you to name any names here, but I'm curious, was there any trends in the kind of things that they were all bringing up and asking for your help with, the kind of problems that they're dealing with? And as a result of those conversations, any predictions on how you see further shifts in cybersecurity over the next year or more? And also, of course, how are you at CoreLight preparing for that future when you sit in a room and you hear all these different trending conversations?
Yeah, Neil, I don't think you're going to be surprised by what they're asking for. In a world where the vulnerability exploit has gone from 3 weeks to 3 hours, the request was, help me go faster, just faster at every possible level. That was the theme. So a lot of what we were talking about was not just the sophistication of the detection analytics, but the ability to drive a response in different customer architectures, right? We have some folks doing first-party AI, right? They're using CoreLight's technology. You've got a bunch of folks that are actually building their own MCP servers, their own agentic SOC models for automation. So how can we participate in that ecosystem? That was absolutely the theme of the conversation. And, you know, the second part of your question was, where are we going to be in 5 years? Boy, if I could give you a credible answer for that, then I should be, you know, I should be retired right now and investing in cybersecurity stocks. I think the simple reality is, I would not pretend to anyone that we have a crystal ball that's better than anybody else about what's going to happen 5 years from now. What I would say is that we've got a pretty good sense for what to do to be ready for it. And that is that in a world where we can't predict the future, what we should be all thinking about is how do you lay the groundwork to be ready for a pretty wide variety of situations? And, you know, I would, again, take a lesson from what this high-end kind of the open source Zeek ecosystem has done, right? Because for the last 20 plus years, there's been this wonderful flywheel of readiness and innovation that's been happening in that ecosystem. Because if you think about what they've been doing, they were doing 20 years ago what a lot of folks are doing now, right? They were getting ground truth of what's happening around the network. They were getting the data that would allow them to find and disrupt these advanced attacks. So this flywheel is new threat needs new data type. That gets added to the project, so then you can find the next new threat, right? It's this flywheel of kind of community-sourced innovation. And it's really threat intel by elite defenders for the benefit of everyone that gives you the best chance of finding that future attack. So that's really the guidance I would give everybody. In a world where we know we can't predict the future, right? Giving yourself the best ground truth data to find the thing that lets you look back in time, that's your best defense against an uncertain future, right? And really, again, I'd love to tell you that I thought of that and I had some bolt of lightning from heaven. That is absolutely not what's going on here. I'm really taking a lesson from the best sourced and best funded defenders on the planet and what they're doing. That's what they've been doing for the last 20 years.
And I suspect this conversation will continue to evolve over the next few weeks, months, and years. And for anyone listening wants to carry that on and find out a little bit more about anything we talked about today, where can people listening find you online and find out more information about anything we talked about today?
Corlite.com, obviously. But, you know, I would point folks specifically to a blog that Greg Bell, one of our co-founders, wrote literally, I think it was last week, on AI and security. The title of it is, "It All Comes Down to the Data, Unlocking the Potential of AI in the SOC." Because, you know, yes, there's lots of great kind of vendor-specific stuff out there, but it really is about understanding how the structure of an AI SOC is going to work and kind of what the ingredients are you need to build that effectively. I thought it was a really interesting piece. So that's the reading I would point everybody towards.
Excellent. Well, I will have links to everything, including that blog post. So I make it easy for people to just leave this podcast and find out that information straight away. And we talked about so much today in a short amount of time, from leading through inflection points, some of the lessons from evolving Corlite from startup to a growth stage leader on a global scale as well. And also how you're driving the future of cybersecurity by focusing on data, evidence and grounded truth. So thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time.
Neil, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
As Brian shared today, the security challenge no longer ends at the firewall, and the attackers aren't knocking on the front door anymore, probably already inside, moving quietly and stealthily through your network. And his message today, I think, was that the future of cybersecurity belongs to those who can see the unseen, verify the data, and automate a response in seconds, not hours. And Corlite's story, I think, is a reminder that resilience comes from evidence. Network data isn't just another telemetry stream. It's the factual record that helps you understand what really happened, why, and how you can stop it next time. And in a world where AI is powering both sides of the fight, I think trust, transparency and speed, these are the things that will define who stays ahead. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on anything we talked about here today. Do you think automation and AI could finally tip the balance in favour of the defenders in this evolving game of cat and mouse? Join the conversation. Let me know. TechTalksNetwork.com. We find all the information on how to contact me and we'll keep this conversation going. But as a man who officially has man flu right now and be struggling to hold back sneezes and coughs, I'm going to go drink some hot lemon or something to try and rest my vocal cords for tomorrow. Speak with you then.